On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyett.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight.
Yes responses, 7,817,247, representing 61.6%.
Same-sex marriage campaigners celebrating tonight after Australians vote in favour of changing the Marriage Act.
With the result in, the focus now shifts to the timing of changes to the law.
To get on with the job the Australian people have tasked us to do and get this done this year before Christmas.
And we'll preview tonight's World Cup qualifier between the Socceroos and Honduras.
All those stories and more in the next 30 minutes.
Good evening. It's 6 o'clock with the news. I'm Mike Tomalaris. The bill that would legalise same-sex marriage in Australia has been introduced to federal parliament. Liberal Party Senator Dean Smith has introduced his bill, which has cross-party support after the result of the National Same-Sex Marriage Survey was announced this morning. Nearly 62% of those who voted in the survey, that's more than 12.7 million people, voted to legalise same-sex marriage. And the yes vote has won a majority in every state and territory. Leader of the government in the Senate, George Brandis, says he will personally propose amendments to the bill to protect religious and other freedoms. He says same-sex marriage and religious freedom can coexist.
Such an amendment would not in any way derogate from the primary purpose of the bill to enable same-sex couples to marry, but would make it clear that, as the Prime Minister and I have always said, that reform and the protection of religious freedom are not inconsistent.
Debate on the bill will start tomorrow. The aim for the Senate to pass the bill by Thursday, the 30th of November. It would then be introduced to the House of Representatives. But Labor Senator Penny Wong is warning that amendments could distract from the essential nature of the bill and the result of the survey.
In relation to amendments, and in the spirit of the respectful way in which others have contributed to this debate, I won't go into a long debate about this. We do have the view that the Australian people voted to lessen discrimination and not to extend it.
Senator Wong earlier wept when the result of the survey was announced, thanking her fellow Australians for voting yes. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is calling on federal parliament to approve same-sex marriage laws before Christmas, and Australians delivered their approval in the voluntary survey. Mr. Turnbull says it's time to respect the voice of the people.
It is unequivocal. It is overwhelming. They are our masters, we who are elected to parliament. It is our job now to get on with it. Get on with it and get this done. It's fair. The people have voted yes for marriage equality. Now it's our job to deliver it.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten has declared it a fabulous day for the country. Same-sex marriage opponents have expressed disappointment at the survey result, but say they won't give up the fight. The Australian Christian Lobby's Lyle Shelton has told reporters he accepts the will of the people.
But while ever there's freedom of speech and while ever there's so many people who have been animated by this campaign, they will want to keep trying to persuade their fellow Australians to win this back over time. Now, that could take years or decades, but I think there's millions of Australians who still believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that is a public good. And there may be a time in the future where we can persuade our fellow Australians to that position once again.
In other political news, New South Wales Liberal Party candidate Holly Hughes has been deemed ineligible to fill the Senate seat vacated by Fiona Nash. The High Court heard Ms. Hughes was a part-time member of the Administrative Appeals Tribunal from July the 1st until October 27th, a day on which Ms. Nash was disqualified from Parliament over her dual citizenship. Under the Constitution, anyone holding an office of profit under the Crown is ineligible to be chosen for Parliament. Overseas now, in Zimbabwe's military says it has taken control of the country in order to root out criminals around President Robert Mugabe. Soldiers have blocked roads to the main government offices, parliament, and the courts in the national capital, Harare. It has been thought the military might be staging a coup against Mr. Mugabe. But a military spokesman says the 93-year-old president and his family are safe, and they're only out to get people who they think are harming the nation. In football, the Socceroos are just hours away from knowing whether they will participate in their fourth consecutive World Cup. The all-important second leg of their intercontinental playoff against Honduras will be held tonight in Sydney. Australia must win to qualify for next year's tournament in Russia after last weekend's first leg in Honduras ended in a nil-all draw. Socceroo Matt Leckie says the team is definitely prepared for the huge game.
Everyone's buzzing, I think. You know, we've definitely put in the last few days the time very well to get ourselves fit for the game. I think everyone's ready to go.
Good luck to the Socceroos. And now a final look at the weather for tomorrow. Thursday, Perth, a possible shower or storm, a top of 36 degrees. Adelaide, a shower or two, 19. In Melbourne, a few showers, 21 the maximum. Hobart, showers, 16. Canberra, showers, 23. In Wollongong, an afternoon shower or two, 23 degrees. In Sydney and Newcastle, a possible afternoon shower, 25. Brisbane, possible shower, 27. In Cairns, a possible shower, a top of 30. And Darwin, a shower or two, possible storms, 33 degrees. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30 with Janice Peterson.
Thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 6:07. Well, it's been a momentous day in Australian politics. Australians have had their say, delivering an almost 62% yes vote for the same-sex marriage postal survey, while 38% voted against changing the Marriage Act. It's paved the way for the country's marriage law to be changed, but that won't happen before Parliament can agree on the legislation. Aileen Phillips reports.
It's not often a statistician delivers breaking news, but there was an exception today when Australia's head statistician, David Kalish, did just that.
For the national result, yes responses, 7,817,247, representing 61.6% of clear responses. That 61.6% of clear responses were yes. No responses, 4,873,987, representing 38.4% of clear responses.
He went on to say,
with this high and consistent participation rate across ages, states and territories, and Commonwealth electorates, Australians can have confidence these statistics reflect the view of the eligible population.
Nearly 80% of eligible voters took part in the survey. Every state and territory recorded a majority yes result over 60%, with the exception of New South Wales, which was below that. Just hours after Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull arrived back in the country following his trip to Asia, he welcomed the news, saying it's time to respect the voice of the people.
It is unequivocal. It is overwhelming. They are our masters, we who are elected to Parliament. It is our job now to get on with it. Get on with it and get this done. It's fair. The people have voted yes for marriage equality. Now it's our job to deliver it.
He's calling on federal Parliament to approve same-sex marriage laws before Christmas. Labor leader Bill Shorten was almost drowned out by the jubilant crowd as he shared his excitement at a same-sex marriage rally in Melbourne.
Australia is ready for marriage equality!
He told the gathering the LGBTI community should never have been forced to put up with the survey.
But you embraced it! I feel for young people who've had their relationships questioned in a way which I wouldn't have thought we would see ever again. But nonetheless, what this marriage survey, this marriage equality survey shows, is that unconditional love always has the last word.
An emotional Labor Senator, Penny Wong, was embraced by her upper house colleagues as the announcement was made. She thanked her fellow Australians for the result.
Thank you for standing up for the sort of Australia we believe in. An Australia that is decent, an Australia that is fair, an Australia which is accepting. An Australia which turns its back on exclusion and division.
Greens leader Richard Di Natale praised Australians for standing up to discrimination. He thanked the Yes campaign for their hard work, support and their votes, and says he's proud to witness an emphatic outcome that says yes to love and equality.
This is a great result for not just the people standing here, not just those communities who have experienced discrimination, but for young people, for future generations, who will now no longer have to walk in a society that says to them that their love is different to the love that other people experience.
Former Prime Minister and staunch No advocate Tony Abbott congratulated the Yes campaign on today's win. In a statement, Mr Abbott says the people have spoken and the Parliament should respect the result. But he's also thanked the over 4 million Australians who supported marriage between a man and a woman. He says he looks forward to a parliamentary process that improves on the bill put forward by West Australian Liberal Senator Dean Smith to implement same-sex marriage with freedom of conscience for all. The irony is, though, voters in his Northern Sydney electorate have sent their local MP an unequivocal message. His seat of Warringah returned a 75% yes vote, one of the highest in the country. And cautiously welcoming the news was One Nation leader Pauline Hanson. In a statement, she says while she acknowledges the Australian public's response and awaits the government's final private members bill, she says One Nation will examine thoroughly any bill before the party determines its position in the Senate. The yes vote now presents Parliament with a choice between two bills to make same-sex marriage legal. One has been proposed by moderate Liberal Dean Smith and another from fellow Liberal James Patterson. While the final costs of the survey are still being tallied, the Australian Bureau of Statistics estimates it will come in under $100 million.
Aileen Phillips ending that report. While same-sex marriage campaigners are celebrating what amounts to a major victory after their decades of campaigning to have the Marriage Act change, others are more cautious. No campaigners point to the fact that more than one in three Australians didn't want same-sex marriage. Omar DeBarge reports.
Yes responses, 7,817,247, representing 61.6%.
They were the words that got the party in Sydney's Prince Alfred Park started, as crowds listened to the announcement from the Australian Bureau of Statistics live. One prominent face from the Yes campaign, champion Olympic swimmer Ian Thorpe, hopes the result helps the next generation of young LGBTI Australians who might struggle with their sexuality, just as he did for years before declaring he was a gay man.
For me, knowing that back when I was younger, when I struggled with my own sexual identity, most certainly would have helped, and I know how much it's going to help future generations of Australians. That should spell it out loud and clear to our politicians. And I think that any of them on either sides of politics, if they play around with this issue any longer, it's going to be at their own peril.
Nam Phan and Benjamin Oh have been together for 13 years. They have a 7-month-old daughter, Anne. And now they're one step closer to being legally allowed to marry. Ben broke down in tears as the announcement was read out, embracing his partner and child.
I think it means that Australia have chosen to be a kinder society. It's chosen love over fear and hate. I mean, against all odds. I mean, this entire process was constructed and wanted by people who do not want us to be equal. Yet against all that odds, Australia has voted resoundingly against it. Now it's a time of reflection, but also a time to heal and a time to reach out to one another to say that, you know, let's build a kinder country without any more discrimination.
Qantas CEO Alan Joyce is one of several prominent chief executives who actively campaigned for the yes vote.
It's an amazing occasion, and it makes you very proud to be an Australian today. I think what this shows is that Australians really do represent a fair go. They really do and send a message about love and commitment. They really are sending a message to our politicians. You should have done this, but we've now done it. We voted in overwhelming numbers to show our support for this. Get on and do your job.
But New South Wales Anglican Archbishop Glenn Davies accepts that politicians need to respect the majority view. But they must also be mindful of the fact that more than one in three Australians voted no.
We accept the fact that the Parliament should legislate for same-sex marriage as the majority will of the people. More than one in three Australians don't want same-sex marriage. And what we need to realise is that whatever the Parliament does, they need to care for all Australians, not just the 61.6% of people who voted in one direction. It's less than two-thirds of Australian population. Therefore, we need to protect what I have been saying over the months, freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, and freedom of religion.
The Australian Christian Lobby's Lyle Shelton said he accepts the will of the people.
While ever there's freedom of speech and while ever there's so many people who have been animated by this campaign, they will want to keep trying to persuade their fellow Australians to win this back over time. Now, that could take years or decades, but I think there's millions of Australians who still believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, and that is a public good. And there may be a time in the future where we can persuade our fellow Australians to that position once again.
Peter Dukas from the Federation of Ethnic Communities Council of Australia says that for many multicultural communities, there's still a stigma of fear around the debate. He says his organisation is working to address how same-sex marriage will affect their communities and how it will affect religious freedoms as well.
I mean, I think part of it is that there is an inherent conservatism within some ethnic communities, but I believe it's just as relevant on a generational level. Immigrants themselves are often socially conservative. Their kids and their kids are increasingly, as integration becomes more prevalent within a community, are often much more in tune to the zeitgeist at any one given time. It has to do with communication. I think it has to do with how the debate was framed by ethnic communities and how it was framed to those people that cast their votes.
Peter Dukas from the Federation of Ethnic Communities Councils of Australia, ending that report by Omar DeBarge. 19 past six now. Some of Australia's major social institutions are under fire. Just weeks before, the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse hands down its final report. The chairman, Justice Peter McClellan, says there's been, in the past, a prevailing view that reporting of abuse would be detrimental to the entire community, especially if public figures were exposed as pedophiles. Samantha Beniak-Brooks reports.
The chairman of the Royal Commission into Institutional Responses to Child Sexual Abuse says some of Australia's major social institutions failed in their roles to protect children from pedophiles. It's just one of the comments that seem to give an indication as to where the Royal Commission's findings will head a month before it hands down its final report to the federal government into the five-year child abuse inquiry. In a speech in Melbourne, Justice Peter McClellan said police forces often failed in their duty to protect Australian children because they often refused to believe their complaints. He said police forces had an understanding for many years that they would protect alleged perpetrators to show a face of stability.
The Royal Commission received evidence that at least in Sydney and Melbourne, there was for many years an understanding that the police would protect members of the church who may have offended. It reflected a more general community attitude that it would be detrimental to the entire community if its pillars were exposed as criminals. Assumed stability of society was seen to be more important and the protection of the child or justice for children through the prosecution of offenders.
In many religious institutions, he said, alleged perpetrators were allowed to have access to children, even when church leaders knew they posed a danger or were transferred to another location without being reported to police. The five-year inquiry has found tens of thousands of children have been sexually abused in more than 4,000 Australian institutions. Some institutions even have multiple abusers who sexually abused multiple children. Alarmingly, Justice McClellan said over 60% of victims do not disclose their abuse.
It is believed that as many as 60% of victims never disclose their abuse, and only 5 or 6% ever report to the authorities. When victims do disclose their abuse, it is often after significant delay, sometimes taking more than 20 years, and in some cases many years more.
And even as the knowledge of cases becomes more prevalent, the sexual abuse of children continues to this day.
The sexual abuse of children is not just a problem from the past. Child sexual abuse in institutions continues today.
The Royal Commission will hold a short hearing to mark the end of a five-year inquiry in Sydney on December 14, a day before handing its final report to the federal government on December 15.
Samantha Biniat-Brooks with that story. Well, to the US now, where the Attorney General Jeff Sessions says he now recalls discussing connections between the Donald Trump campaign and Russia last year, after earlier testifying that he had no knowledge of such contacts. Mr. Sessions' memory was jogged by newspaper reports about then foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, George Papadopoulos, who has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with Russia. Rosemary Bolger reports.
Back in January, Jeff Sessions appeared before Senate hearings to confirm his appointment as United States Attorney General. At the time, he told the committee he was unaware of communications between the Donald Trump presidential campaign and Russia. 10 months later, he's been forced to update the record after reading newspaper reports about a March 2016 meeting he attended along with then foreign policy adviser George Papadopoulos. According to court documents, Mr. Papadopoulos, who has pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with Russia, told the Trump campaign meeting he had connections with Moscow and could help arrange a meeting between Mr. Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Mr. Sessions told the hearing that information jogged his memory.
Frankly, I had no recollection of this meeting until I saw these news reports. I do now recall that the March 2016 meeting at the Trump Hotel that Mr. Papadopoulos attended, but I have no clear recollection of the details of what he said at that meeting.
What he does remember more clearly, he says, is rejecting Mr. Papadopoulos' offer because he thought it may have been improper.
After reading his account, and to the best of my recollection, I believe that I wanted to make clear to him that he was not authorized to represent the campaign with the Russian government or any other foreign government for that matter.
Despite the memory lapse, Mr. Sessions says he's never changed his story.
I can only do my best to answer your questions as I understand them and to the best of my memory. But I will not accept and reject accusations that I have ever lied. That is a lie. Let me be clear. I have at all times conducted myself honorably and in a manner consistent with the high standards and responsibilities of the Office of Attorney General, which I revere.
U.S. intelligence agencies believe Russia interfered in last year's U.S. presidential race, from trying to infiltrate the Trump campaign, providing damaging information on Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton, and flooding social media with fake news and advertisements.
Rosemary Bolger reporting there. Well, it's do or die in Sydney tonight for the Socceroos when they face Honduras in the second leg of their World Cup qualifying playoff. Saturday's nil-all draw in Honduras means the Socceroos need to win to secure their place at the 2018 competition due to be held in Russia. It'll be the 22nd match of their qualifying campaign, the longest campaign any nation has played on the road to Russia 2018. Evan Young previews the game.
The equation is simple. Win and the Socceroos are going to Russia next year. A goalless draw will send the tie to extra time and potentially a penalty shootout, while a score draw will see Honduras through on the away goals rule. Australia has come to expect a place at the World Cup, but with powerhouse footballing nations like Italy, the Netherlands and Chile all failing to qualify for Russia, the Socceroos can't afford complacency. Captain Mile Jedinak says tonight's match is the culmination of a very long qualifying journey, one that began back in June 2015.
What's at stake makes it even more special and makes us even more, you know, determined to get the job done. This whole campaign, we've touched on, you know, what it means, and I think everyone knows that. It was instilled in us, you know, a long, long time ago when all this started, about the impact sort of we wanted to make and what we wanted to do and achieve.
The Socceroos had struggled to attack on a heavily criticised pitch in Honduras on Saturday in San Pedro Sula. Tonight's match in Sydney is expected to be played in better conditions, though patches of the surface are still recovering from a monster truck rally late last month. Midfielder Massimo Luongo has told Fox Sports he's confident the team will rediscover its forward threat.
Previous games have showed that, you know, we do like to score at home. I think we can do, and I think with a nice pitch and the crowd behind us, you know, we will get chances. Sydney's always been good to us, so hopefully we can come home with the job done.
Forwards Matt Leckie, Robbie Cruz and talisman Tim Cahill all missed the first leg. All, along with commanding midfielder Mark Milligan, are expected to come back into the team. But coach Ange Postecoglou says he's yet to decide on his starting team.
Yeah, I'll have a look at the boys today and see how they train and make the decisions there. But yeah, the adjustment will come not because of any reaction to the first game. The adjustment will come because, yeah, again, I'll put out an 11. I think we'll win the game for us tomorrow.
Postecoglou's future has been the subject of much speculation since reports surfaced last month he would step down after the qualifying campaign. The former Brisbane Roar and Melbourne Victory boss replaced German Holger Ozic in 2013, leading Australia to an Asian Cup win in 2015. But Postecoglou says he's only focused on tonight's match.
That's all my focus is, because it's just too important to think about anything else. And I wish I had more brain space to be able to deal with more than one thing at a time. But as my wife consistently tells me, I'm best when I just concentrate on one thing. And in this case, it's a game.
Returning to action for Honduras will likely be young winger Albert Elise, back from suspension. The 21-year-old is widely considered one of Central America's best up-and-coming players. Honduras finished fourth in the North and Central American qualifying group, knocking out the United States in the process. Honduras coach Jorge Luis Pinto says his team is ready for tonight's second leg.
For the game, we need to have a cool head but hot blood, because it's going to be a tough game. Honduras has recently played good football, though we have lacked some depth. It will be a very aggressive 90 minutes.
The lead-up to the match has not been without controversy, with Honduras accusing Australia of spying after spotting a drone above their training session on Tuesday.
Evan Young with that preview. Time to check the news headlines for you now. And as we've been reporting, Australians have given same-sex marriage their approval, with almost 62% voting yes. A majority yes vote was recorded in 133 of the 150 federal electorates across the country and in every state and territory. The bill that would legalise same-sex marriage has already been introduced to the federal parliament. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull wants marriage equality legislated by Christmas. And same-sex marriage opponents have expressed disappointment at the survey result, but say they won't be giving up the fight. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see SBS World News across Australia with Janice Peterson right now. And you can also live stream the bulletin by going to our website at sbs.com.au/news. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.